This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 226 for the week starting 15 July 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, SA's premier tech news website and podcast network.
On Talk Central this week, is South Africa's digital migration project finally kicking into full gear?
Also this week, DStv opens the whole of SuperSport to all subscribers. And Photoshop is coming to the iPad.
Nice. It's Sunday. We're live on live.techcentral.co.za and it's time to talk everything technology.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very nice to have you in the studio for a change.
Yeah, it's like the good old days, right?
Yeah.
A little intimate session of talking tech for once.
Yeah, well, welcome to the studio.
I like what you've done with the soundproofing. It's sounding, I'm looking forward to hearing what I'm going to sound like in this soundproof booth.
Yeah, no, it's going to sound very good indeed. But yeah, good to have you in the studio for a change instead of recording on the internet.
Although it makes it a lot easier, doesn't it? We were talking about it before the show. Just, you know, if you got your setup at home, just cranking up the old recording software and just recording the show. I mean, it's so much easier than setting up, driving out. It's nice to have the ability to do that.
For sure. We are recording live this Sunday afternoon. As always, if you have any questions or comments, please do send us a WhatsApp voice note. We'd love to hear from you. Don't be shy. The number is 071-999-1111. 071-999-1111. And you can send those all week and we'll include them in our show next week if we don't do so today. But before we get into the week's news, let's do our quiz.
Let's do that. First question. Which pay TV provider is currently the subject of a multi-billion pound bidding war between Rupert Murdoch's 21st Century Fox and Comcast?
The former group CIO of Telkom has joined which South African company as acting CIO until the end of the year?
Third question. Broadcom this week acquired which US technology company?
And South Africa this week unveiled a powerful new radio telescope in the Northern Cape. What is the radio telescope called?
Quite exciting, that one, actually.
Yeah, it is.
And according to IBM Security, the last question, according to IBM Security, the average cost of a security breach in South Africa has risen to what? And it's quite a big number.
Yeah, it's pretty staggering. As always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news. And I want to talk a bit about digital migration, because it seems things are actually starting to move on that front. The Minister of Communications, Nomvulo Mokonyane, is actually doing stuff, which is quite exciting. We all know that she left her previous department in a bit of a mess, and that's putting it mildly, water affairs and sanitation. But she does seem to be moving apace with getting a move on with this digital migration project, which is positive. Of course, she's appointed this advisory panel of industry experts to advise her on the migration process. And of course, she's also appointed Aldred Dreyer of Centec to head up the project management office. And I'll be doing a podcast this week with Aldred Dreyer to get an update on the digital migration program and what's involved and where we're going and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm really looking forward to that discussion. But things seem to be happening. The office that Aldred Dreyer is now heading met with TV manufacturers this week about bringing in integrated digital TVs into the South African market. In other words, TVs with integrated digital receivers in them. And as we know, Richard, set-top boxes are only ever meant to be an interim measure until people have these IDTVs
and
receiving these signals. The fact that they're having these conversations suggests that, although there's never really been a formal communication on this, but it appears that we're pushing ahead now without encryption, which I think is a good thing. Mm. There was such a waste of time on that encryption debate.
How much can you quantify the amount of money that was lost, potentially revenue generator, just general money that we've lost by delaying this process?
Oh, it must run. I mean, I can't, but it must run into the billions of rand in lost revenue potential just from the mobile operators not having access to the spectrum. So it's positive that the things are moving forward. But I'll be having a chat with Aldred Dreyer. Excuse me, for our live listeners, I'll have to cut that out for the podcast. I think it's this chilly chilly weather that's bringing on a bit of a cold. What was I saying? Oh, yes. It's positive that things seem to be moving ahead. There's still so much work to do, of course. Once all the broadcasters have moved across to digital and the analog signal has been switched off, we still have to do something called digital restacking, which is the process of effectively restacking the spectrum to move the broadcasters around, free up the digital dividend band, and begin the process. And that's quite a complex process as well. So I'm looking forward to chatting to Aldred about what that involves exactly during our podcast this week. But I think for the first time in a long time, it looks like there's actually some momentum developing behind this thing. We are 3 years past the deadline. better late than never, I say. The question is, should we even be looking at digital terrestrial television at all anymore? I know a lot of money's been put into DTT. Centec has spent billions rolling out its network.
We may have gone too far down that path. We can't really just convert to the latest technology anymore. We need to kind of see this through, I think.
Maybe.
To some degree.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, does it make sense to have terrestrial television at all, or whether to simply use satellite bandwidth to provide services to South Africans who don't have access to pay TV services, direct-to-home pay TV services. And maybe it makes sense. I mean, we've seen the success, and I use the term success in describing the number of customers they've rolled out, not necessarily how they're doing financially. I think they're losing quite a lot of money. But we've seen the success, in inverted commas, of OpenView HD, which is a free-to-air television platform launched by the same company that owns ENCA and ETV. Perhaps there's an argument that we should just get free up all of that spectrum, because there's going to be more. We know there's going to be more and more pressure over the years for the mobile providers, the wireless broadband providers, to use spectrum below 1 gigahertz. And in a country where fixed line penetration is so poorly developed, so many people are going to rely on wireless services to get online. Do we really want to just free up that digital dividend, or should we be trying to free up everything for mobile broadband? Because those bands that even the digital TV broadcasters are going to sit in, which I think is below 700 or below 600 megahertz, I'm sure in future there's going to be demand, and I think countries are going to start to look at possibly moving off terrestrial as well. So maybe we should lead the world in this project and just go satellite right now.
Yeah, look, I think it's also inevitable that we're going to end up in that way. It's whether do we leapfrog now, and who's going to lose the most money? I think that if you look at that direction, you might kind of see if it's going to be feasible or not.
But I'm going to put that question to Aldred Dreyer this week when I meet with him, get his views. Should we can the project entirely and go satellite? Interesting to see what he has to say about that. Because, I'm sure there's some nuance here. We know that a huge amount has been invested by Centec and broadcasters in rolling out DTT. Mnet has already, or MultiChoice has already launched GoTV. They're very quiet about it, though. I'm not sure why. Technically, you can go and buy a set-top box today from MultiChoice and watch terrestrial digital TV through a platform called GoTV. It's available. They're not marketing it. I'm not sure why, whether governments asked them not to punt it, and given that we haven't really begun the rollover yet. But, these companies have spent a lot of money on this. So what would the implications be if we were to switch off terrestrial as an option? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. Aldred will be in a much better position to provide expert views on that. So I look forward to putting that question to him and seeing what he has to say about it. But yeah, we seem to be inching forward again.
Yeah, it's definitely good news. I mean, you were talking about DSTV's digital terrestrial plans. I mean, many, many years ago, there was a few players that actually had some demo phones and demo devices that were operating on the DVB-H, I think it was, or one of those kind of channels. And it was, I'm talking about 4 or 5 years ago. So it'll be nice to see these things coming into the market now, finally, as a consumer device. Because I thought they were pretty good, and they definitely served a need, even if you don't get that quality through, even on a small device like that. But yeah, I think the data, digital broadband, that whole thing is definitely streaming. I mean, next 5 years, I think the current generation, they don't really even look at terrestrial or satellite as a means of digesting content anymore, unless you've got DStv at home.
Yeah.
For everybody else, anybody in the younger generation now, it's data, airtime.
Yeah, yeah.
Mobile, you know, you don't need anything else.
You're right. That, I mean, while we talk about possibly going digital or going satellite for digital, of course, the top end of the market is moving off satellite now and onto IP. You know, it's what terrifies MultiChoice is the guys who are cutting the cord are the guys who are on that premium subscription plan, and they're going for, they get fiber, they cancel the DStv, they get Netflix or Amazon or a combination of them, Showmax as well.
Look, in DStv's defense, or MultiChoice's defense too, I mean, if you look at what the DStv offering is, and I'm not a subscriber, but you know, you can't always equate it one for one, you know, unless you never watch any of those channels, which a lot of people don't. There is a lot more content on a satellite subscription. You know, you just get so much more coming through.
A lot of it's rubbish.
A lot of it's repeats too. But I do, from time to time. The other night I was thinking, you know, I went through Netflix. There was nothing I wanted to watch. I went through Showmax, and yeah, there wasn't anything. I started a few things. There was nothing really that caught my attention. It's kind of the same things I've seen before. Now on satellite, you know, if that's where you like to consume, you'll always have another option. So you can, you know, just watch something that's been kind of curated for you. And maybe that's what's needed in a kind of digital broadcast environment, streaming environment, is give us some curated live streaming content, or at least curated content over a stretch of evening. So like you would get, you know, three or four shows that were lined up for you that you can tune into, obviously play on demand if you want to. Because, you know, if you always have to go out and choose something you want, you do get to a point sometimes where I think you can't find new content very easily, especially if you only have access to two channels.
Yeah. Well, this actually segues quite nicely into our next topic, and that's SuperSport. They, MultiChoice, own SuperSport, of course, and DStv and Mnet. And they announced earlier this week that they will be opening up all of the SuperSport channels. In other words, all the channels that are available on premium. I think there are 12 of them, 12 SuperSport channels, to all subscribers. I think with the exception of EasyView, which is that very base one that costs 20 or 30 rand a month.
What? I didn't even know there was such a package. Is that like for one or two channels, or
it's kind of similar to OpenView. It's very basic free to air type content.
If you get the SABC channels,
you get the SABC channels. I think you get ETV, and then they've thrown in a few other things. I think SuperSport Blitz is on there, if I'm not mistaken, which is kind of a highlights reel.
You just need to pay a television license, right?
Well, and you need to pay MultiChoice, whatever it is. I think it's 30 or 35 rand a month.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But it's an alternative. If, for example, your terrestrial signal is poor, you're living in a more outlying area, you can get EasyView. And I actually know quite a lot of people who've got EasyView just because they don't want to have to fiddle with aerials and stuff.
No, it makes sense.
But all the other channels, so Access, I forget the names of all of these now, Compact Plus, which used to be called Extra, I think, and then Premium. Premium, obviously, there's no benefit for premium customers, but everyone on the tiers below that, gets access to the full SuperSport channels as of the 13th of July, this past Friday, until the end of July, so for a period of just 2.5 weeks or so.
Was it just to lure everybody in and to upgrade?
No, I mean, clearly that's what they're hoping. It comes at an interesting time because, you know, this is the sport that's on at the moment. Today, we've got the World Cup final at 5 o'clock this afternoon. We've got the Wimbledon final, which I will be glued to, from 3 o'clock this afternoon. And there's Tour de France going on. There's so much sport happening at the moment. So they've opened it up to all subscribers. So, an interesting move. Clearly, they're hoping to lure people on lower tiers into the higher tiers. And it makes sense because they're losing customers at the premium tier.
And let's not forget, this is also coming from the company, and I'm saying this very lovingly, but that invented Open Time. Remember that? Mnet Open Time back in the day. How many customers did that not bring for them? Because they made some really quality programming available for free to anybody. Obviously, the SABC wasn't very happy at the time, and that's why they had to stop it. But
They were told to stop it, I think. It was 2 hours of Open Time, then it was reduced to 1 hour, I think, and then it was removed completely.
It was quality program. I remember that.
Loving.
I remember, no, not loving. There was some really good stuff. I mean, the stuff that you grow up as a kid, you know, some the kind of sitcom shows that getting Malcolm in the Middle type stuff that's as a kid you kind of grew up with that.
Mm.
We never had access to that otherwise. We didn't have the internet to see it. These American shows.
I'd actually forgotten about those days. You sit there watching the squiggly lines on the TV and then at 5 o'clock it suddenly becomes clear. it was called Loving, that soapy that was on there. Hey?
Yeah, it was. Well, Loving was one of them, yeah.
It was on for years and years and years.
But Igoli was a thing that was on MNET. That was a thing that drove the Igoli. MNET.
Was that
maybe Loving was before that. I don't know. Never watched it.
Loving. No, I didn't watch it either, but I think it was quite big.
I'm sure you didn't watch it.
No, never.
Nobody would have just... Soapies.
I think it was one of the longest running soap operas in the world. I don't know if it came to an end. Maybe it's still running somewhere.
Probably is in some country. Yeah.
Yeah. but interesting move by MultiChoice. They're under pressure. There's no doubt about it. And I mean, you were talking just before we started recording about this infographic that was doing the rounds on Twitter this week, comparing the price of Netflix over 2 years with the price of DStv Premium. And the suggestion was, well, no wonder people are quitting, because it's 4,000 Rand for Netflix over 2 years versus something like 24,000 Rand for DStv Premium over the same time frame. And it's true. You know, if you're not a sports addict, you don't need DStv Premium, let's be honest. There's so many good shows on Netflix and Amazon Prime and even on Showmax.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of stuff on DStv that when I had it, never watched it. A lot of channels. I mean, I guess you can also argue the problem with having so many channels is you kind of get stuck on that couch. You know, you don't think about your programming. I think from a health and wellness point of view, you know, that's another area and completely that you can argue why having all that content on demand. Like, okay, we have it on the internet and people do it with gaming all the time. You sit in front of the computer. But, you know, channel hopping is a terrible thing, terrible habit to get
into. It is. Yeah, it's such a time waster. I don't channel hop at all anymore. I just don't do it. If I want to watch something, I decide what I want to watch, then I sit down in front of the TV and watch it. I don't sit there, what's on, click, 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 click. And I think that just makes people frustrated, you know, going through 40 channels of
nothing,
soap operas or sport or whatever. Yeah,
there's some cool sports channels. I mean, obviously, SuperSport is a great.
SuperSport is a fantastic service
because there's just so much on there, and I do miss that. And you can't. There's nothing you can equate to. But you know, do you argue that that's because SuperSport's got a monopoly on it and they don't make it available to anybody outside of their ecosystem? Maybe. Yeah, but I think it's about time they need to start making.
A lot of people argue that, and, you know, I probably had this view as well for a while, but, you know, a lot of people argue, you know, they need to break down this monopoly. MultiChoice must be forced to share its sports rights. Why should they? I mean, they've built a successful company around acquiring sports. Access to sports is not a human right by any stretch of the imagination. And they've built a very successful company. Yeah. And if someone wants to challenge them, then let them challenge them. It's probably going to be someone like Netflix or Amazon who comes in and starts buying up sports rights. But do you punish them because they've been successful? I used to think that, you know, maybe there needs to be some regulatory intervention here, but I don't longer think that. I think let the market sort itself out, and it will sort itself out. As we're seeing now with the decline in the number of premium subscribers, it's putting pressure on MultiChoice. They're not going to be able to increase prices, or at least they're not going to be able to increase prices like they did in the past. And they're being forced to be more innovative. For example, they've announced that they are going to be launching 4K on DStv Now.
Nice. I see, that's cool. That's bringing value again to what you've got. But when I look at the SuperSport, the whole SuperSport thing, you know, I'm certainly in agreement with you. I don't think the legislation should come in or any kind of regulatory anything to do with this. But what I can see happening is if SuperSport doesn't innovate and make this available, like maybe in an alternative way, maybe pay-per-view or something for the big games, you know, somebody's going to come in and take it away from them. People are going to jump. They're not going to have loyalty because, you know, it was so difficult to get hold of it if you weren't a subscriber. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. And we've seen it with so many things in the digital space. When the internet came in, how many companies battled and closed down because they didn't innovate. And, I mean, I'm sure, you know, MultiChoice will stay up there with the innovation. But, man, would it be nice to see them come in with a really cool package X that, I mean, I don't know what it would be, but it will give people access to big games. You know, that would make me more likely to be a SuperSport subscriber in the long term than jumping to somebody else as soon as they come in, because they've kind of made this option available to me. And that to me is how I feel about kind of that sensitivity around the sports rights.
Mm.
You know,
so gonna, nice the competition's see. Good. It's going to make them. It's going to. It is already making them think about their position in the market and what innovation they offer to consumers. And you know, I think 4K coming to DStv now is the result of competition. I think the plans to launch streaming only version of DStv is the result of competition.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, and without a doubt, somebody is going to come in and buy some sports rights.
It's inevitable.
Take something away from it. Might be a small thing, but it's going to happen. A big company is going to come in. Let's say somebody like an Amazon or a company like ESPN, who's got interest in sports already, for them to roll out just an ESPN Africa. In fact, there probably is something like that already.
Yeah,
you know, they've probably got lot more money behind them than somebody like MultiChoice. In any case,
yeah.
So disruption is on the cards, and
for sure. For sure.
I would love to see a South African company come out top here.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be the big internationals.
Who do you think the guy is going to be going after the sports like this?
I think Amazon. Mm. Amazon. They're already showing so much interest. Netflix isn't really.
No.
But you know, Amazon just recently won the rights to broadcast, the streaming rights to broadcast UK Premier League football. They're broadcasting.
How much money does that cost? That must be much more than
huge.
Rugby could ever be.
Yeah, it's massive.
And rugby is one of the biggest things in South Africa, obviously. So if they can buy soccer from a soccer loving nation.
Yeah. It's a matter of time before one of these guys is in a bidding war against DStv for the right to broadcast sport, the sport.
Mm. I would love to be part of those strategy meetings. On the fly on the wall and see what they're thinking. Yeah. I'm sure they've got some cool plans. I'm sure logistically some of them are difficult to implement. And but man, we live in an exciting time when we know what the technology can do. Yeah. And customers are now starting to demand from the service providers what they should be delivering on.
I do have a bit of a beef with Calvo Mawela, who is the CEO of MultiChoice South Africa. He keeps repeatedly saying in interviews that Netflix should be regulated the same way that DStv is. We are being competed against unfairly, he says. Netflix doesn't even have a presence in South Africa. It needs to be regulated. It needs to face the same BEE rules, the same licensing things, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's wrong-headed. I think what he should be arguing for is less regulation on MultiChoice, not more regulation on the competition. Of course, more regulation makes it easier for the incumbent operator, in this case MultiChoice, to fend off new rivals. I think what we should be looking for, and perhaps what politicians should be arguing for in Parliament, is for less regulation of this sector, not more. He's right that that MultiChoice is in an unfair situation against relative to Netflix, but the solution to that isn't to insist that all the same regulations that apply to MultiChoice apply to Netflix. The solution is to reduce the amount of regulation on MultiChoice and other South African pay TV companies or broadcasters in general. I think that's the solution. I think that, of course, he's arguing for more regulation because it makes his job easier. You know, they are finely tuned to dealing with the regulatory environment here in South Africa, whereas startups aren't.
Mm.
Let's make it easier for competition. Let's make it easier not just for Netflix, but anyone who wants to enter the space. Celsius, Black, you name it. There are lots of them out there, smaller players. And guys who probably want to come into this industry, lower the barriers to entry and make it fair for everyone, but don't raise the barriers of entry for everyone.
Exactly.
Because that only serves to protect the dominant player in the market, which is MultiChoice.
And I think one last thing from our side, and I hope all of these guys are listening. It's I think these operators also need to, or these players, these broadcasts need to also realize that people aren't going to be subscribing just to one service. So you are always going to be subscribing to, whether you have DStv and Netflix or DStv, there is going to be two or three subscriptions. So it's no point in trying to say like, oh, one of the other ones needs to be regulated, or there needs to be some things some things imposed on them, because there's going to be other players regardless, and people want to subscribe to them because you can never have all the content.
Yeah.
They will never be able to get all the content. So if they can make peace with it and work competitively, but happily in an ecosystem where, it's like business 101. Let's just out-business the other guys with what we're offering. Maybe let's try and get those big blockbuster movies before Netflix can. I mean, that, you know, that's always been a
good... Actually, they do.
But
DSTV's movie selection is much better than Netflix's movie selection.
For series, you go to Netflix. I mean, because you get a different experience there. Mm. I think everybody can work happily. And if you got the sport and, again, make it available to the guys somehow, we'll pay for it. I'm not saying we should get it for free. I mean, we'll pay. And again, pay-per-view to me is the thing I keep hammering on about. Mm. But for me, it's like pay the 100, 150 rand for a rugby game or something, or a massive game. I don't know how in line that pricing would be internationally, but it seems to be relatively fair. That's what a good rugby ticket price costs if you go to the stadium. You know, it seems like a good solution. Mm. You know, I would pay for it, and they'd probably make more money off of it.
Yeah, I'm sure inside MultiChoice they're having these discussions all the time. Do we unbundle SuperSport? Do we make the SuperSport channels available to competitors?
But look, if they do this route that I was suggesting, it'll still make more sense for somebody to be subscribed if they watch a lot of sport. But for people that, like me, who don't really care too much for all the channels, I've got money that I would give to somebody to watch these games. For now,
You don't want a premium subscription.
But I don't want But now my money goes to the pub where I go sit to watch the game, and that's the reality of it. It's not in the comfort of my own home. Mm. And these are little decisions that we make: 150 rand here, 200 rand there, over the period of a year. Mm. I'll be paying a fair share towards MultiChoice if that was an option available to me. They're not getting that money.
Yeah, I agree. It makes sense to do it. I'm sure they've thought of it. I mean,
I'm sure they have.
Very smart company, very smart guys. And I'm sure they've looked at all of these options, and I'm sure they've got actuaries in there who crunch the numbers. And
I think it's also got to do with the platform, to be honest with you. And also the repercussions. They need to think about it very carefully. Like, what are the repercussions if I do live stream certain, do pay-per-view for certain events?
Maybe when they introduce the live streaming service, the streaming-only service next year, there'll be a pay-per-view element to it. Who knows? Mm. Interesting to see.
It would be very interesting to see. Otherwise, Amazon's going to do it. I can guarantee that.
By the way, if you are a DSTV subscriber, go and have a look at DSTV Now. If you have a 4K TV, go to all channels and scroll down to the very last channel in the list, and you'll see something called R&D testing. I am led to believe that is testing of a 4K stream. Mm. I got it to work on my phone in the DSTV Now app. I tried it on the web on my PC, and I also tried it on my iPad in the app, and it didn't work. I got a black screen. The audio came through, but I got the stream on my smartphone. Now, it's very much, I guess, in testing phase right now, so perhaps it's even working. So if you're listening to this live and you want to watch the World Cup this afternoon in 4K, maybe it's going to be there.
Beautiful.
I haven't been able to get it to work on my PC, but then I haven't looked since Friday. But the very last channel called R&D Testing on DSTV Now is apparently their 4K test feed. So if you're interested in seeing what it's going to look like, go and have a look.
That's the way to do it. Nice.
Yeah. Keep an eye on it, because
I am jealous as a non-DSTV subscriber. I'm not going to lie to you.
4K is going to be fantastic. In fact, I'll be watching all. You know, if they launch their channels in 4K, I will consume all content that I consume on DSTV, not through the set-top box, but through streaming. Mm. I'll do it like that in a heartbeat. 4K, fantastic.
And I think that'll be a perfect test bed for them to see how many of their customers do it, which probably be most of them. Most fiber connected guys will
provided
definitely do
they've
it.
Got 4K, a 4K TV, and I think the penetration of 4K TVs is rising quite nicely in the market now.
Yeah.
Prices have come down significantly. I see you can buy a 55 inch 4K TV now for about 12 grand.
That's crazy. It's crazy. I also got a 720p LG. I don't use it that often because my computer is my main source of ink, but I'm surprised that thing's still going. And that thing cost me, 10 grand back in the day.
Mm. I bought my TV about maybe two and a half years ago, maybe 3 years ago. I bought a 60-inch LG plasma. I went for plasma because of the quality of the blacks in the image. It's not as great on LED.
They don't make plasmas anymore, do they?
No, they stopped making them. It was one of the very last ones, which is why I actually decided to pull the trigger and get the upgrade at the time. But it doesn't support 4K. It's a 1080p TV. Maybe I'll sell it.
If you're willing to sell it, maybe let's talk.
my next TV is going to be OLED, no doubt about it. OLED 4K.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
And the OLED prices have come down as well. I was looking on Takealot the other day. You can now buy a LG 70-inch OLED TV for 30,000 rand.
Wow, that's a massive TV. Where do you put something like that? 70-inch?
I've actually kind of got this informal policy. Whenever I buy a new TV, it has to be bigger than the last one.
Where are you going to end up, Duncan? You know they don't make TVs larger than, I think, 110 inches or something?
No, Samsung does a 150-inch TV.
Oh, really?
Jeez. But I don't think that'll fit in my lounge.
And also, the bank would probably say no.
Yeah, no, I think that one costs about $250,000, if not more. Actually, I think it's over $1 million now that I think about it. But prices will come down, and that 70-inch OLED this time next year will probably be 20 grand. So, yeah. But, I must hold off because I want OLED. I don't want one of these backlit LED TVs. Yeah, OLED is just – have you ever seen an OLED TV in action?
No, I haven't.
It's beautiful. These things are microscopically thin because the OLED technology – just the panel,
wafers, yeah.
It's wafer thin. And the contrast and the blacks on the screen, that's the most important thing in these TVs, is superior to plasma. It's true black on the screen.
Oh, I can't wait.
You know, you get this light bleed and stuff on LED.
Yeah.
But it's incredible how quickly OLED prices have come down. And LG is the company that's really been championing it. Samsung hasn't. They've got some proprietary thing called QLED or something. I'm not quite sure how it works, but I
probably upscaling something to something, right?
Yeah, I think it's still backlit LED as far as I know. But OLED, I think is the future, and I think all the manufacturers are going to go in that direction eventually.
Yeah, I think I need to upgrade my VHS player first. and then maybe to DVD or Blu-ray. Yeah. I think if Blu-ray is still a thing.
When are you going
to
replace that BlackBerry of yours?
You mean the original Nokia 3310?
Yeah.
Yeah, this week I am, speaking of migrating back away from platforms, I'm going to be Apple-free this week. I'm moving back completely to Windows.
And your iPhone?
Yeah, I'm fully on Android right now. I've got Windows. Obviously, I've got a Windows machine, but my notebook's going to be a Windows notebook as well.
So, do you know what you're going for yet?
I know. I'm waiting for my options to arrive. It's either going to be a Dell XPS or an Alienware.
I know which one you're going for.
Well, I mean,
they're both Dell, actually.
They're both Dell, yeah. But that's the thing. I'm going to see which one is more suited to my purposes, power wise, and then we'll see. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Interesting migration to go away from Windows. It's a bit of a sad...
From
Mac OS. Mac OS, sorry.
Mac OS, yes. We were suitably chastised by one of our listeners a few weeks ago for calling it Mac OS.
But see, in conversation, Mac OS, just, it's easy to say. You know, you don't break up Mac OS and then you go on with it.
And I suppose it's iOS as well, not iOS.
Does it really matter?
Doesn't really matter at the end of the day, no. No. Let's take a quick ad break. We'll be back right after this for our live listeners. We'll be back right now.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rehat?
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. The last bit of news to talk about this week. I don't know if you're excited at this as I am, probably shouldn't be. Photoshop is coming to the iPad. That's quite a significant development, right?
Well, Photoshop has been. It's just now a different...
No, this is the full Photoshop.
This is just a different... I mean, the previous package. Ones were... I didn't really find much use in them. They were glorified photo editors.
Yeah.
If I was using my iPad more, I would say yes. But at the moment, the iPad just plays Netflix in my life. You know, it's not really. I still need a physical, because there's so many shortcuts and so many things when I do use Photoshop.
You know,
I think But it's inevitable that's the way to go. I mean, if you have a full touchscreen-enabled photo editor like Photoshop, there's going to be a lot more people using it, that's for sure.
The interface will obviously have to be a bit different to what you get on Mac and Windows.
But if it's easier to do certain things, because Photoshop, you still have a bit of a learning curve, right? If you look at what Adobe does with their software titles and how, I mean, their software on PC and Mac is, it's pretty complex. You need to kind of understand. If you know the ecosystem, it's straightforward. If you use it for years, you can kind of get by. But when you look at the app generation, you know, it needs to be, or it has to be from a user interface point of view, it has to be pretty easy to use. So if they can bring all that strong features of Photoshop into an app, and make it easy to use, like full sections, you know, to remove stuff out of the background or to cut and paste certain things to create those Photoshopped images. I think this is going to be pretty interesting.
Of course, it's going to be fully integrated with the Adobe Cloud. So any work you begin on your iPad, you can continue on your desktop, which I think is pretty powerful. It's only going to come out next year, apparently, according to the reports. And my guess is it's only going to run on certain iPads. I would imagine the iPad Pro, probably the one that comes with the Pencil.
Yeah, it would make sense to do it for that. I don't think my third generation iPad would have support for this.
I suspect my iPad Air 2 might not support that either. Mm. It's the high-end, more modern iPads, I'd imagine, that have the grunt necessary to run an application as powerful as Photoshop.
And then also, if you look at the time frame, it's very likely that they will be introducing, I would imagine, a new version of Photoshop for other platforms that'll just kind of, because you would have to have the same kind of engine, underlying engine, right? Some of the stuff would probably be, you know, maybe some of the stuff on the iPad gets offloaded to the cloud for processing.
Possibly.
Maybe if you have a desktop computer with some processing power, I don't know, they could do some really interesting things because they've got that system, you know, they've got the cloud process, they've got the cloud storage for all their design files. And things sync quite nicely in the Adobe ecosystem. So if they do use this as an opportunity to Photoshop, maybe some of the other apps, Premiere Pro is another one of my favorite apps that I use all the time. If they do something like that on a mobile platform, something powerful, a powerful video editor, there's another kind of opportunity, I think, to gain the masses, because it's such a big thing these days. Everybody's shooting on their mobile device. Mm.
I wonder how they price it on the iPad as well. I mean, I presume it'll be included in the Creative Cloud subscription if you have one of those, but I wonder if they're going to sell it as a standalone app for iPad as well.
I would imagine not. I mean, I think it's $10 now for one app, so if you just get Photoshop, or I think there's a photographic bundle which is $20, which you get Photoshop and maybe one or two other things, or Lightroom. I would imagine that they put this in that package. Unless they've got a specific mobile-only version for $10 once off or something, you know, like they normally do. But that doesn't make sense because they keep updating it so often.
They do.
And I would imagine that they would want to make this work in an ecosystem. Mm. Work with your desktop machine.
I think you're right, yeah. My annual subscription to Creative Cloud is coming up in a few weeks, and it's always painful watching that because I'm subscribed to the full package and I pay annually.
I do monthly. It's not too bad monthly. It's $600 or so. What does it work out to yearly?
It's about $8,000, $7,000-$8,000. It's a lot of money. Unfortunately, you know, you get the option where you can get two apps for I think $20 a month or $30 a month. But I use three apps. I use Photoshop, Audition, and a bit of Premiere Pro. And I keep meaning to teach myself Illustrator, but I haven't done so. But I use those three apps, so I need the full package, even though I don't use the other 20 apps.
Yeah, yeah. It's a DSTV model all over again. Should we make this a topic? Unbundle Illustrator, unbundle Premiere Pro, if you look After Effects.
If you look at Adobe share price, it has done that model, the cloud subscription model has done so well from that share price. It's just been going through the stratosphere.
Look, as somebody that makes a living of using the software,
it's worth it.
Compared to now versus what I used before Creative Cloud, when you had your yearly licenses,
GIMP,
and generic updates. No, I never used GIMP. I
was always horrible.
Always Adobe. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I tried it. It had lots of promise, but didn't really deliver. But paying monthly for software, the amount of improvements they do, just the quality of the Adobe software. Mm. You know, I'm a happy client. I really am. I wouldn't. It's one of the few tools that I would happily pay. Dropbox is another one, you know. Mm. You get the service you pay for, and you can entrust them with, you know, that level of, I mean, they do mess up sometimes. There's been some updates that kind of broke things and broke some Premiere Pro videos of mine, which I haven't given them for yet, but it's a great service if you're in a creative industry.
Mm. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Great. Well, that takes care of this week's news. Let's move on to our regular features. We don't have a loser this week, but our winner this week is Netflix for scooping the most Emmy nominations, beating HBO for the first time. It just shows you the rise and rise of Netflix as a force in the television industry. And beating HBO, which of course
that is incredible. Yeah. HBO used to have all the stuff, all the best series.
For sure.
Netflix has done very well, though. I mean, but again, the thing is, once you've watched all of those awesome titles, then you need to wait for the next batch of really cool things from Netflix.
I can't keep up. I cannot keep up. Every time I fire up Netflix, there's three new series.
We're not going to binge something. I haven't binged a series in a while.
No, my wife and I tend to watch one or two episodes at a time, and we probably get through four or five episodes in a week. So we don't watch that much TV. Maybe I'm for binge watchers, maybe there is a lack of content, but I certainly, I finish a show.
No, right, there's no lack
next?
Of content for binge watchers.
Look at all of this.
Sure.
Yeah. And of course, Ozark is coming next month.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait for that. Did you see season one of Ozark?
Yes. Yeah.
What a fantastic show. Really looking forward to season two of that. The show that I am absolutely besotted with at the moment is Peaky Blinders.
Oh yeah, I've watched it. Yeah. I don't think I've finished the whole thing, but it is cool.
Yeah.
It's a very nice period show.
You have to watch it with subtitles because some of the accents are really difficult to to figure out.
Yeah.
But it is fantastic television. I'm on season three now, and it's in my top three TV shows of all time. Really, really good.
There's another one similar in kind of, I think, period is, I completely forgot. Empire Boardwalk. Boardwalk Empire.
I've never seen that.
It's kind of also Prohibition era, 1920s. Mm-hmm. I think it's Chicago or Atlantic City or something.
Okay.
The start of that, which I really appreciate shows like that.
Okay. What's your pick this week?
So I've got these cameras that I've had for about a year. They're IP cameras by a company called Amarillo. And I use them from time to time. But
Amarillo, New Mexico.
Amarillo, yeah.
Song was that? Amarillo. Depeche Mode sang that. Didn't they?
I don't know. No, I'm going to have to think of the lyrics, and it's probably going to, on the way home, I'm probably going to, that was a song.
Behind the Wheel or something. I forget.
Anyway.
I've
set up these cameras again. Amarillo, it's a company name, and they're based in South Africa, or at least the local agents for them. But what makes these products very cool is, I mean, out of the box, you set them up pretty straightforward. It's pretty straightforward to set up. The app, once you fire up the app, you put in your Wi-Fi details, you scan a little QR code, the camera scans it, and then everything works. And then it obviously automatically syncs up to the web because it's via your internet connection. So if you have fiber, the quality is is very good. So it took me 10 minutes to set up both cameras because I've got a show house today, so I just wanted to make sure everything's going well at my place. So I just put the two cameras up, installed them quickly, and it works. And I showed you just before the show how effortless it is. So now that I've...
Who's that guy in a mask in your house?
Oh, yeah, he shouldn't be. Why is he picking up the TV? That's not right. Look, there is a way for you to call the emergency services. If you see something like that, you can program in a number and then it'll automatically call, whatever you want.
Yeah.
But there you can see I've got two cameras set up. It's streaming obviously over fiber, so the connection is good. It's doing it 720p. But these are the kind of things you can just pick up and play somewhere if you need it. The one is certified to be outdoor. It's a patio camera, Amarillo patio, so you can mount it outside.
Waterproof.
Waterproof, yeah. And the other one is an indoor camera with infrared. And you can also, it's called the iCare. So it is the iCare FHD, and it's got a few uses. It comes with a little remote control that you can activate the panic alarm. So one of the uses for it is you can set it up for, if your parents are old or in an elderly home or something like that. There's a panic button if you need help, and there's two-way communication, so you can speak to the person on the other side. I must actually check that they're not hearing what we're saying when I do that. No, I've set it up not to do it. But so you can have a conversation with this camera, and both of them do 360 degree rotation, so you can pan around.
It can be kind of fun during a show house. Hey, you, what are you doing?
What are you doing? I can see you. Why are you talking? What are you saying about this? That spot in the roof was there. So, I mean, the prices range from just under three to about 4.5.
Per camera.
Per camera, yeah. Okay. But again, it's the kind of thing, if you have one or if you have multiple, you know, the app works with all of them. You can view all of them. And it's one of the kind of most accessible home IP cameras I've played with for a long time.
Easy to use.
Very easy to use. Very easy to set up.
Is it Wi-Fi, Ethernet?
Wi-Fi. Like I said, so to set it up, you literally plug in the camera. Once it's booted up, it does a little rotation to check that the motors are working. You have an app on your phone that you scan. You show the little QR code to the camera. It then registers all the settings, at the Wi-Fi settings. And then you've got access to it. And then obviously it's over the internet as well.
And it's not streaming all the time, only when you look.
Only when you go in. You can have it recorded. So it does plug into Google's Drive. So you can record straight to your hard drive automatically when it
fill
detects.
Fill it up pretty quickly. But I suppose you can set it to
set it to when there's movement. So what I've got, it set it up. As soon as it picks up movement, it'll record that clip.
Oh, nice.
And save the photograph.
I'd like to get something like this. I'm going to have a look at this.
I'll even get you one of these. You can play with them. They are really cool. And I've played with a lot of these cameras, and some of them are very difficult to set up.
I've tried before. I had a camera from a company called Axis, I think.
Yeah. You see, Axis are great cameras. They're superb, but they're very high end.
Hard to use.
And they're not designed for you to set up in your house.
They're business cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, and I've got two big Axis cameras that you can live stream IP, and it's beautiful what you can do. I mean, you can track number plates and all those things, but you know, it's overkill for most home users.
Are these 4K cameras? Or?
No, these aren't 4K. They're 720 and 1080.
Do they do a 4K?
I don't think so. I haven't seen anything new from them in that.
Although 1080 is fine, actually, for surveillance.
To be honest with you, even 720, look, I mean, it would be nice to have something like 4K, but again, you need to then look at bandwidth upload if you have access to fiber. And I had a question that one of the things that always pop up for me when I'm looking at stuff like this is, what is the security like for the feed that I'm pushing out? So that's obviously something you always need to be wary of. Do you trust the company potentially with the credentials? And I've had this question, I've posed this question to these guys, and Amarillo is one of the few companies that's got all the right certifications in place. If you do a search online, you have people raving about the security, talking about the security.
I don't even
from
think
a, from
that,
a eh? very from a very you know it's a solid yeah. you know, this isn't what the Americans fear, a ZTE style business that you can't trust their thing, their services. So you have to be very cautious with that.
And two-factor authentication?
This doesn't have two-factor authentication.
It doesn't?
No, it doesn't. Okay. But it's secured connection. It is
I'm just thinking, in case someone gets your password, do they have two-factor authentication on their website?
Oh, on their web, but this is going straight from device to
But if they've got your password, can they access your stream?
Well, there's no. I don't have an account with Amarillo, so the connection is between the camera and my app.
Oh, I see. It's direct. There's no Amarillo involved.
So if I do record, it'll go straight to Google Drive. Look, I mean, yes, if they're a malicious company, there's a lot of ways in that places in that chain where they can get access to it. Mm. But I would be more wary of
dodgy routers. Why would they want to do
it? Yeah, exactly. And they've got a very, very good track record. I haven't seen any potential breaches.
Is it an American company?
Yeah, it's an American company, and they've got local distributors. Yeah. You can find them on Facebook, amarillo.co.za, but that's with a Y, amarillo.co.za.
I'm pretty sure that Depeche Mode song goes Amarillo, New Mexico.
Sounds like a Johnny Cash song.
I'm going to have to go listen to it after that show today. my pick this week is a startup website, which I had an interview with one of the co-founders this week, a chap by the name of Josh Miltz. The company is called Bitfund, bitfund.co.za. As you know, I've been playing in Bitcoin. I bought my Bitcoin through Luno. I've sold all my Bitcoin in Luno now, and I've transferred it across into Bitfund. And I've joined one. They've got multiple funds which they manage in cryptocurrency. So I've joined something called the Balanced 10 Fund. Put in a little bit of extra cash as well. Mm-hmm. And they've got three or four different funds that they manage, depending on your risk appetite and what you're trying to do. I've gone for the basic one, which is something called the Balanced 10 Fund, which invests in the top 10 cryptocurrencies based on weighted according to their market capitalization and rebalanced weekly.
That's
the movements, yeah. So I've invested. So through this now, I've invested from largest to smallest in Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, Bitcoin Cash, EOS, Litecoin, Stellar, Cardano, IOTA, and NEO.
I haven't heard of most of those.
Yeah, I must say a couple of them I also hadn't heard of, like Cardano. But it's a nice way of approaching the market. So, you know, Bitcoin is obviously the one with the highest market cap. It makes up about 53% of the portfolio in this balanced fund. They've got other funds where your exposure, they can invest, for example, in the top 20 cryptocurrencies, where your exposure to any one cryptocurrency is no more than 15%. So it's capped. Once again, it gets rebalanced weekly or fortnightly. But it's an interesting approach. They charge 2.4% a year in fees, so it's probably not the cheapest option out there. And then they charge 1% to withdraw your money. But I decided to go for it. You know, I was invested in Bitcoin. I thought I'd give more exposure to the market because, you know, there must be other coins out there that are going to be doing some interesting things.
It's clever to do it like that, I think.
And I'm really doing this to learn as well. And so now I'm invested in 10 coins. 10 cryptocurrencies, including...
I was just going to say, do you have 10 coins? Wow.
No, I wish. Especially Bitcoin. but, yeah, these smaller coins. Like, I mean, I've Litecoin, for example. I didn't know nothing about Litecoin. I know nothing about Cardano or IOTA. But now that I've got some money in them, and certainly on some of these cryptocurrencies, my exposure is quite small, just because of their relative market cap compared to things like Bitcoin and Ethereum. But I'm invested now, so it's a learning process. And I'm going to, you know, if I see a story now on Cardano, I'm probably going to read it, learn about more about this. So, yeah, Bitfund.
Crypto geekery.
Bitfund.co.za. It's an interesting little startup. If you can get your way through the 2.4% annual fee, then have a look at them. They're quite cool. And if you've got some spare cash lying around, have a punt. Although I must say, this is not investment advice, and
I'm not a financial advisor.
I am not a financial advisor. I am no expert, and you may lose all of your money.
Yeah.
Before anyone thinks of suing me.
But, and then just like as a final, as an add-on pick to yours, go check out deadcoins.com.
Deadcoins.
Deadcoins.com. It's basically a list of...
coins that have died.
Have died, has been hacked, or was scams, or was parody coins. It's just a nice little it's pages and pages and pages. But if you're not sure, go reference that list.
There was that website, I can't say its name on the show since we're a clean channel, but remember Fast Company magazine? Mm-hmm. Came right around the dot-com bubble. I think it might still be going, actually. And then, of course, the whole market fell to pieces. And there was a website that was launched to chronicle all the dot-coms that were failing. It was called, I'm going to abbreviate it here, but it was called eftcompany.com.
I never saw that. That's clever.
Dot-coms. And it was a hugely popular website at one point because there was, you know, after the dot-com bubble burst, there were dot-coms going out of business every day.
It was difficult to keep track of them. I mean, it was a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Those baby diaper businesses who went out of business.
Yeah. I mean, pet food and all the rest of it.
And Amazon survived, A to Z.
Amazon not only survived, but good grief, it looked like they're going to be the first company to a $1 trillion market cap. Incredible stuff. And I think that's our show for this week, apart from our quiz results. Let me do the first question. Which pay TV provider is currently the subject of a multi-billion-pound bidding war between Rupert Murdoch's 21st Century Fox and Comcast? And the answer is the UK's Sky. And maybe there's hope for DSTV yet. I mean, Sky is a legacy pay TV broadcaster, just like DSTV.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point, actually. Mm. Somebody buys them out or buys them and takes them into the 21st century. You never know. Second question. The former group CIO of Telkom has joined which South African company as acting CIO until the end of this year?
And I forgot to put in that question that his name is Len de Villiers.
And the answer there is the JSE.
The JSE. And Broadcom this week acquired which US technology company? And that is CA Technologies, formerly known as Computer Associates.
Wow, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
Fourth question. South Africa this week unveiled a powerful new radio telescope in the Northern Cape. What is the radio telescope called? And the answer is the Meerkat. We didn't even speak about this, but that's pretty exciting stuff, I think.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. Did you see the first photo it took?
No, I didn't.
Some image of the center of of our Milky Way galaxy. Very cool.
I'm going to go check that out.
And, of course, that's the precursor to the giant square kilometer array, which will be the world's biggest radio telescope by some margin.
Giving us Wi-Fi in every corner of the universe. Netflix everywhere you go.
Well, possibly picking up Wi-Fi from the planet Zorb. According to, excuse me, the last question this week, according to IBM Security, the average cost of a security breach in South Africa has risen to how much? And the answer there, 36.5 million rand. Mm. And that's our show for this week. As always, if you've got any feedback, our WhatsApp number is 071-999-1111. That's 071-999-1111. Please send us a WhatsApp voice note. Any time during the week is cool, and we'll include it in our next show next Sunday afternoon. We record live around 1 p.m. On a Sunday afternoon. It's been great having you in the studio, Rechart.
Good to be back. Thanks.
But no doubt we will be talking over the intertubes again next week.
Yeah, it's funny how complacent and comfortable you get in your own little
space.
Studio and your space. Yeah.
So, from Rechard and myself, until next week, take care and cheers.
Ciao.